This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. 9 individuals were indicted today on criminal charges related to the Flint water crisis, including former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder. Many of the names of those who were charged will be names that you've heard before. This is one of several cases seeking justice for all the people in Flint who suffered everything from skin lesions to brain damage and more because of tainted water flowing through their city's system. State Attorney General Dana Nessel has presided over the latest stages of the inquiry. Our guest today is Noah Hall. He's a professor of law at Wayne State University and a former state prosecutor who was involved in the initial independent investigation of state officials. Noah, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just roll this back a few steps for those who may be just picking up the story. How does what happened in the Snyder administration in 2014 relate to these charges today?
Well, so actually the decisions made in the Snyder administration that led to these charges probably began back in 2012 and 2013 when the Snyder administration began the process of taking over the city of Flint through emergency management and ultimately directing the city of Flint to join a new water authority, indebt itself with bonds to pay for a new water supply, which eventually led to the need to use the Flint River and the decision to not use corrosion control in 2014.
Yeah. We should say that you parted ways with the Attorney General's office in 2019 before the decision was made to drop the initial charges and restart the investigation. With that in mind, can I ask, what's your take on AG Nessel's decision to open a new investigation?
Sure. Well, actually, as far as I know, it was the decision to terminate the prior investigation and restart it was made by Attorney General Nessel or Solicitor General Fadwa Hamoud, not Governor Gretchen Whitmer, at least as far as I know. And at the time, I was both frustrated that the existing investigation had been shut down, especially after we had really achieved some pretty big initial successes in court advancing the cases. And I was skeptical that the Attorney General was shutting down our investigation with the intent of bringing it back better in the future. I'm happy I was wrong. It looks today like my skepticism was not justified, and Attorney General Nessel came through on what she promised, which was when she shut down our investigation and terminated us, myself included, she really was building back a better investigation that was going to do more work and go even further with developing charges. And it looks like that's exactly what's happened over the past 2 years.
Arguably, the top line in this story is that a former governor, Rick Snyder, is now facing a misdemeanor charge. Do you see that as a step toward accountability?
Yes, tremendously. And I very much appreciate the frustration, especially from folks in Flint who've seen loved ones die, who've seen loved ones' quality of life destroyed, who've seen their own households destroyed, not to mention what's happened to the community in Flint. I absolutely understand the frustration that the former governor is facing, as they would put it, only misdemeanor charges. And given the seriousness of what happened in Flint and the loss of life, I could see the frustration in the governor only facing misdemeanor charges. As somebody who's been skeptical and critical of Attorney General Nessel's team's work over the past 2 years, I would actually, at this point now, suggest that folks at least give the prosecution a little bit of time and give the process a little bit of time to see how the charges, these misdemeanor charges, will develop in future proceedings. We might very well see additional evidence come to light that will warrant even more significant charges against the governor.
By comparison, there are some very serious charges aimed at Nick Lyon, the former head of Michigan DHHS, and his former chief medical officer, Dr. Eden Wells, each facing 9 counts of involuntary manslaughter. What would prosecutors have to prove in order to get a conviction on these very serious charges? And do you think that they can do it?
Sure. And you know, again, to be clear, not only, of course, are all defendants entitled to a presumption of innocence, but I don't have access to the information that was submitted to the grand jury. But just going on both the public information and the information, the evidence that we introduced during our first investigation and preliminary hearings, we filed charges against Nick Lyon for involuntary manslaughter and advanced those charges through preliminary hearing in front of a district judge. And the district judge ultimately made the decision that there was sufficient evidence to warrant a full trial on involuntary manslaughter against former Director of Health and Human Services, Nick Lyon. And so now we're seeing those charges come back. It looks like they're bringing additional charges for manslaughter of additional individuals, more victims of the Legionnaires' disease. And it looks like they also will have even more evidence to demonstrate the alleged crime that occurred. From the evidence that we've already seen come into court, though, the prosecution has in the past already established that Nick Lyon had a duty to protect public health, had the information available to do so, and for reasons that have nothing to do with public health administration or science, made the decision to not inform the public as well as the medical community about the ongoing risk of Legionnaires' disease. And at least during the first stage of the investigation and prosecution, the district judge saw enough evidence that Nick Lyon failed to protect human health and made decisions that cost human life to warrant standing trial on involuntary manslaughter. If the new prosecution team has additional evidence and has documented additional loss of life from those decisions, I expect them to get similar results in court.
The state archivist told the Associated Press that what's happening right now has never happened before, that former governors have never faced criminal charges for things that they did in office. Can we assume that that is by design? Is there any benefit of doubt that we need to offer our state's executives, maybe beyond the governor, that the decisions they're making might be the best they have at the time?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. And this is a question I know that a lot of folks, even in government and outside of government, are going to be thinking about as this case unfolds. But I hope people will take the time to see the facts as they play out in these proceedings. As the facts will begin to come to light and the full story will be told, I don't think you're going to see government officials making the best decisions they could at the time, and simply in retrospect, they were wrong. I think the facts and the evidence are going to show far more intentional wrongdoing. You're going to see conspiracies. You're going to see obstruction of justice. You're going to see coordinated, ongoing efforts to advance one agenda and discredit both public opponents and minimize the harm that was being created in the community. The system and the process to demonstrate all of these facts, and folks will be able to make their own conclusions as they see the trials unfold. But this was not a simple case of government officials doing the best they could and making a mistake. Quite the opposite. These were government officials who intended to advance an agenda, and in advancing that agenda, threatened and ultimately harmed human life.
Noah, what do you think this process will deliver that hasn't happened already in the years of legal wrangling over what happened in Flint?
From the time I spent working in Flint and trying to give that community some sense of justice, how important it is for the people of Flint to see the state of Michigan, whether it's the Attorney General's office or some other clear sign of authority from the state of Michigan, finally say to this community that what happened to you was wrong. And, you know, I don't want to celebrate charges being filed because, you don't want to celebrate a crime having occurred. You don't want to celebrate that somebody broke the law and somebody lost their life as a result of it. But I am very happy and relieved for the people of Flint that they are getting some vindication and some acknowledgement from their state that what was done to them was wrong and that they're going to hold people accountable.
Noah Hall is a professor of law at Wayne State University. Noah, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Anna Clark is a reporter with ProPublica, and for many years she pursued the story of Flint's water crisis as an independent journalist. She's the author of The Poison City, Flint's Water and the American Urban Tragedy. Anna Clark, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Can we step back to the point at which state prosecutors announced that they were throwing out the prior cases against eight defendants and just starting all over again? How was that news received in Flint?
With a great deal of ambivalence, as you can imagine. This was about a year and a half ago, in the middle of 2019. So at that point, the first wave of the criminal investigation had been going on for 3.5 years and had spent many, many millions in public dollars for the both the investigation as well as the defense of these public servants. And suddenly it all fizzled down to nothing is what it seemed like. At the very beginning, the current attorney general and her team announced that, you know, they were very serious about continuing the investigation. They just wanted to start from scratch. They felt that a great deal of the evidence hadn't been scrutinized appropriately, and that they were going to begin at the beginning, and if there were charges to be filed, they would be ones that they felt would hold up in court, is what they said. And so for folks in the community, at least from what I heard, I mean, there are people who were just emotionally drained and sometimes, and in many cases, quite angry at feeling kind of jerked around with this, and also doubtful, not sure how serious to take the promises that this second investigation would be effective in bringing accountability to this water crisis. And some folks did feel hopeful, did appreciate the team did a kind of a town hall in Flint, and they were eventually opened an office in Flint. And, you know, some people took that as some signs as, well, maybe something's going to go forward with this. We'll see. Just there was a lot of like cautious, skeptical watchfulness. And then that the second wave of the investigation has been very tight-lipped ever since, up until just a couple days ago. I mean, there was no real clarity on where it was or what it was doing or what was going on until, of course, the breaking news right now.
Indeed. Well, we know that this is a case that has occupied a lot of the state's time, attention, and money, both defending and prosecuting the case. But let's turn this around. For Flint residents, what's it been like for them?
In watching this go forward, I mean, well, it's incredibly stressful. I mean, I feel like people very reasonably want people to be held accountable for the actual choices they made that caused actual harm. That is a reasonable thing for people to expect and want. And it's been one of the very peculiar legacies of the Flint water crisis that has been utterly undone up until this point. The folks I've talked to, I feel like aren't really sure where to place their emotions. They're very clear that whatever charges are filed or whatever convictions are done, it doesn't make everything right. I mean, the health consequences for the children, especially who were exposed to toxic water, are lifelong and incurable. And so, I mean, there's like that doesn't go away. But people are very, very hungry for people to be held accountable for the actions that led to this crisis for themselves, their families, their children, their neighbors, the town that they've chosen as their home. And for any meaningful healing to happen, that's critical. You just have to have accountability.
Flint is getting close, but the work to replace all of its lead service lines is still not done. And for the most part, the story has faded from a lot of media coverage. Do you think that moving these charges back into the news means something new for the sense of urgency in finally dealing with the consequences of the switch to the Flint River. I mean, this happened almost 6 years ago now.
It's amazing. It is amazing. You're right. There's the replacement of the water pipes has been another sort of ongoing story. They've replaced, as of late December, I think close to 10,000 of the lead lines, which is great, but it's not quite yet complete. And of course, it needs to be complete. And that's when people think about whether the Flint water crisis is over, that seems like square one. this infrastructure that caused so much harm to people that was worsened and damaged by the choices that decision makers made with the water. So if it brings more urgency to the very practical needs of folks in the community, whether that is involving the pipes, education, health services, access to healthcare, and other sorts of wraparound services that are necessary to thrive and flourish, I would be glad to see it.
Have you been able to stay in touch with any of the families that suffered health problems as a result of this?
Some, though I have to be honest and be like not in a day-to-day way. But I think that for the folks that I have kept in touch with who have been struggling with a number of health issues, I mean, they feel very frustrated with the fact that the spotlight has moved away, where a lot of people are just assuming that the water crisis is, quote, over because so much time has passed and because there have been some progress made on some of the remedies when they live in a day-to-day way with conditions that they attribute to the water that cause a great deal of pain and suffering for themselves. I think that lived consequences of this water crisis is something that it's incalculable, and it will be years before I think maybe we can fully process all of it, where we really see what the full stakes have been for folks.
Reporter Anna Clark with ProPublica. Anna, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.